I don't know, right or wrong reasons, but, you know, you go back, we keep flirting with this idea. So what was the early church like? Well, it was filled with division. What was the early church like? They definitely didn't have the Jews or the Romans to stop everything so that they could worship. They had to do that around everything else. God got a hold of their lives, and they were called to his kingdom. I was reading in the membership book here for tonight and just reminded again what we have been called to, why we make this a big deal. The very fact that this stuff in here is a little foreign, a little constricting at times to people, shows in my mind how far off we are from biblical norms. And the point isn't just membership in a church. The point is how we're viewing coming to Christ. What does that mean? Who did we come to? Did we choose it? That's the whole thing in the beginning of this book here, as it talked about. This is not just a voluntary organization. It's one of the things, we're glad we still have an adult choir, but one of the strengths and, one of the weaknesses of an adult choir is that it's voluntary. So then they think, well, I'll miss tonight, I don't feel good, or I don't feel like singing anymore, or it's not musical enough, or it's not, they're goofing too much, I'm out of here. And so it said, when we view it as a voluntary organization, you go, whoa, I'm not tied to this building, you, any of these people. Who are we tied to? What does it mean to be tied to Christ? What does it mean to be bound together with his people because of Christ? Christ is our head. If I had time, I was reading Deuteronomy 4 this morning. And it's amazing that after, you know, all the way through, you expect it, I think, in Deuteronomy to hear about, keep my commandments and judgments. I love you. I'm for you. There's a way back. But even that way back is including keeping commandments and statutes. Well, in Deuteronomy 4, they're 40 years later after wandering in the wilderness. But wandering? That took a lot to move that million people around. And you keep seeing them, well, ask this king for food. he'll give it to you, pay for it. I just thought, I've seen that just with taking 30 people into a McDonald's. You mess them up. You know, and they're like thankful for the business. But all of a sudden, they get the, you know, what happens when you take a million people through? Pay them for food. Where are they getting that food? And then you saw the other kings. They said, well, these kings aren't going to give you food, but ask them anyway, and then I'll let you wipe them out. You know, it's like, but there's 40 years of that. Our lives are short. Remember I said we're a young church, but we're getting old enough to watch our hair go from dark to black. I mean, black to gray to falling out. We're watching wrinkles come, and that's what happens. We only get so many decades down here. And so what are we doing with it? Do you come to church to get a better life? Do you come to church to find a place where you can receive? I was talking about that in the first chapter in here, too. Think about it. We are not tied to each other first. We are tied to God. God is the one that calls us to declaring his glory together. It happens individually. Talk about that in the membership class tonight. But it ends up putting us together. The work that God does in our hearts is for the common good, 1 Peter 4:11. So with that as a reminder, this is the last chance you have to get the syllabus and the book here before 4:50 tonight. We need every bit of that hour before we come out here to the church service together. It's a long day. We'll talk about that some here in Sunday school. Why would we do that? I know we're tired. I know we got a million things. Why would you ask for more when we're already stretched to our limits? We'll come to that. Do the best we can. But that's today. Remember that conference? Don't all have to go. It was interesting for especially those men that went through masculine mandate together to go and hopefully get to listen to Richard Phillips, who wrote that, hear him speak twice. And Dr. Reichen, 10th Pres, has had a key place here in Philadelphia for evangelicalism. And then Wheaton College has definitely had a big place. A big deal. My dad's seminary, which was the place to go to train pastors, is having its last year in Chicago. Chicago is a mecca for evangelicalism. And it's their last year as they head up to Canada. Just financial issues, lack of students. Big deal. I forget the facts. I think it was like 1,600 students in 2015, down to 700. I'm not sure if those were on-campus students or online students. I think it was half of each. It's a big deal. But they just announced the big name that I've been hearing, Kevin Van Hooser, has just switched over to Wheaton College. And it sounds like a football team, because they go, a big win for Wheaton, but a big loss for Trinity. We'll talk about that as well. Why is that so important to us as a church? What's going on with these different ones? But the big thing is, what does it mean for us to be in relationship with Christ? Not us choosing to follow him, being regenerated, truly born again. Pray this as we start here this morning. Father, thank you for the work you've done in lives just to bring us here together. That there's much that pushes against us looking to eternity. I was thinking of that book title, Competing Spectacles. The parable of the soils calls it the cares of the world. And they are. They're part of life. We are to deal with our job, our health, our children, our finances, our country. There are many things that are calling, but above them all is not just you asking for a place, is you being the final word. The buck stops with you. You are the one that raise kings and tear down. You are the one that opens hearts. I can hear Jesus saying, my sheep hear my voice. Oh God, help us. I fully believe that you save completely those who come to God through you. And yet constantly aware from my own life the need to maintain that relationship with you. No, to know you and not just be busy about things that have your name on it, so that after preaching to others, I myself might not be disqualified. Father, would you help? Because you are gracious. We can trust in you. There is assurance for believers. But there it is, for believers. So, Father, would you strengthen our faith? Would you help us to do the work of worship today? Would you help us here in Sunday school as we deal with parts that, yes, the roots, which aren't as attractive as working with fruits. We like to talk about that. We like to eat and know and do. Father, if we are not grounded on you, you say it will be burned up. It will come out to nothing. So, Father, the work you plan to do here, I pray that you would be glorified in us individually and then together. I pray for this same work going on in churches around the country, around the world. As today, we have the job to spread the glory of God. That, thank you, Father, that you call us to be a light to the nations as you assemble for yourself a people. And so, Father, I pray that what comes out of us is true to your name, your character, and is according to your word. We come in Jesus' name. Amen. Make sure you check out the bulletin insert. This is, we try to get from different circles of that we run in. And this guy's, well, these books are more from the evangelical circles. This guy is what I think is some of the best of some of the fundamentalist circles. But this is very helpful. You can find it. You can get subscribed to this on your email or look at these online. But we'll stick it in your bulletin to get you started. Check those out in the nick of time. Okay. there. We have a problem. What? Well, here was the problem. I'll just read it. I'll comment. How much should a leader? Leaders decide what is valuable and where we should focus. This is all about how did we end up with 8 years in faith in future grace. And how much consideration should be given for people's preferences, opinions, or felt needs? Meaning, if this isn't worth my time, then I'm just not coming. Sorry, nothing personal. It's just not valuable. What should a small church prioritize? We don't have resources to accommodate everyone's felt needs. Does everyone deserve the benefits of a large church? There are more opportunities for people to get what they think they need or deserve. To find a church that fits their understanding of growth and service. Do we deserve that? What is the skeleton and flesh of a healthy church? A lot of thought has gone into, so how do you date? What do you encourage your sons, daughters to do? What is right? As the church goes back and forth between what is dating, what is courting, how much involvement should the parents have? What should you look for? I'll tell you what. I just knew from my parents that high school was not now, and then college, why not? Why aren't you not dating? It's like, well, what happened in between? I also knew that it was a Christian or nothing, and I knew that sex was for marriage. That was about it. So then you pray for a godly woman. Well, then you pray for a Christian, no sex before marriage. And then, I don't know, what do you pray for? Blonde hair and blue eyes? Because that's about what it came to. Then you started picking a few things like, well, Lord, that'd be really nice. You could do what you want, but I'm looking for. And things have changed. Skeleton and flesh of a healthy church was a skeleton and flesh of a healthy girl, a healthy guy. You realize after a while, you say boy, girl. And today you go, wow, that's a gift. My daughter wants to marry a man. That's good. You know, and you say, whoa, we're not there. Wait till it's your son or daughter. You go, well, it's your fault that my daughter wants to marry another woman or she thinks she's a guy. Careful. Careful. That's what we're talking about with a church. It's gotten that bad that I think what we call church is so far. It's in your head, our heads, not just that's a good or bad church. How are you determining what a good, bad church is? What does healthy spiritual growth look like? Are you growing? Who would determine that? You? Them? I'm thinking about those in the past, both in the Anabaptist circles, the Puritan circles, the others, but before communion, the elders would come and check on you to see your spiritual condition individually and as a household. You comfortable with that? We're talking about stuff like that as we look inside of here. It's going to feel a little tight, and you realize, wait, maybe we have the whole view of growth wrong. Josh Harris, before he falls apart, every time I mention his name, then I want to pray for him. But he had to stop dating the church book, which he said, I realized I was going to this church for this thing, this church for this thing, this group for this thing. He said, I was in the driver's seat, and I never realized what did God have me to be a part of. He said, if you're not a part of something growing together, you're a cancer cell. You got growth, but you're growing off on your own in the wrong direction. What's the common mission then for all Christians? You're different than me. You will always be different. No matter how much I try to imitate you or you me, you'll never be me. I'll never be you. You say, good. Yeah, I know, because we're individualistic. We think very much that it's bad to be like one another. Follow me as I follow Christ, Paul said. And I think our generation needs to listen to the follow me part. Follow who? And you'd say, well, then where is Christ calling us to go, and how much does that interact with other people? How do we determine value? We're looking for standing firm in one spirit. Paul's writing to an individual group of believers. You know nothing about them. You know nothing about how different, how strained they are to be together. He's saying, I will hear of you, you're standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. Same thing here. I won't read them all. They're all looking for a goal, the mission for all Christians, whatever we're doing, it's going to include the unity of the Spirit. Why? Because we're born again by the same Christ. There's not a different goal for all Christians. So if that is the problem, and the more we were talking last week, you know, I was thinking, what problems might occur if the people you're tied together with life and ministry don't have a common history? As I was listening to your responses, not against you guys, but, you know, it's clicking to me. The more I ask these questions, the more it seems in your answers, you're almost afraid of a common history. I think denominations are good. I think a common background is healthy. All the problems that come with them, I agree with all of it. But that being said, well, I think a bunch of us have been in things, either not had a similar heritage, so you think people lean on that in an arrogant way to exclude others. That's true. I think also that we've been in circles that were tight around the wrong things. Trying to get away from that. My boy is working for a neighbor who, about my dad's age, George's age here. He's a very smart guy. I love that my kid's learning from him as well as working from him. But I won't go front door with the gospel with him. I'll go back door. Because he made it clear to my son that I think everybody should be able to study the Bible on their own, and we don't need churches and pastors. That would be the healthy world. Well, then you have to ask, what has he bumped into with churches and pastors that makes him feel that way? Where did he get that? But to see the vision of, well, I remember my parents saying this, and I remember this was a common sentiment of, I pray that my children will go further than I've ever gone in the gospel. Not that, you know what that means? They have to be better than you. They have to have, what does better than you look like? Does it mean they earn more money? Does it mean they don't do the three sins that you're embarrassed about? What is growth? What would better than you be? It isn't better than you. It's building on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus being the cornerstone. Okay, so back here. So we come back. The last 4 or 5 years have been telling what is the answer. So on here, I said there we had the problem, okay? We had the problem described these last 4 or 5 weeks. Here are the answers, okay? This is a summary of it. Don't walk away saying I didn't hear the answer. Go back and listen the last 4 or 5 years as we did this in slow. But here it is. Back to my life. Remember, this whole thing is why Future Grace for 8 years. It was December 2nd, 2012 to March 7th, 2021. What was I doing from 1997 when I got married, got out of, I was still in grad school, 1997 to 2012. I was largely working with the youth, largely working with music, a little bit of teaching adults, but largely with starting with the youth. So down here in the church down the street, we were there for a couple years. What was youth group? Youth group had been something that had been passed on to me. Youth group was a devotional. Youth group was games. Youth group was trips. But I started thinking, where are we heading? I remember the first study I did. I was really stressed over it as I wanted to start in a new youth group. And I thought, well, what do you start with? And I was looking for material, and I thought, well, I want to do a series. I don't want to just talk every week from, so I did something on the Sermon on the Mount. But I remember thinking, as that time, back in the 90s, people were starting to realize maybe we created a monster with the youth groups. Okay? It's a long cry from whatever Pastor John described as his youth group. I'm glad to mention your stories too, if you tell me, or publicly. But a long cry from where they were in the 50s and 60s. what happened in the 60s and 70s in youth group. By the time you got to the 90s, people were a little nervous about what was going on with youth groups. So what is the goal as youth groups started to be attacked? Youth pastors were getting thrown out. Forget about the senior pastors. There was some crazy figure, like, you know, 2.4 years was an average for youth ministers. What's going on? And you'd find them getting stressed, like the youth guy was supposed to make your kid want to come to church. And if they didn't, then we need to get rid of them and get somebody else in there. You know, why are they throwing whipped cream pies in their face or eating goldfish? You know, it's because they're wowing your kids because your kids won't come. You know, and there was a ton of pressure there with that. I always heard if you aim at nothing, you hit it every time. So I knew I needed specific goals for the youth group. I started teaching three main goals in the advisor meetings of the youth group, the leadership meetings. What were we meeting? So whatever the administration was, whatever our planning was, it was where are we heading? And three goals started teaching in 2002. Win souls, disciple meaning be one, then make one. Be a disciple, then make one. Teach roles. How do they fit into the whole so that they're not just doing their own thing? That's where we developed the idea that the youth have heard for years now. The youth group is a microcosm of the church as a whole. There is no youth group in the Bible. There is no, at best, it's a living organism. Something's going on. You don't believe that? Show up here on Thursday night once and watch. This place is alive. Something's going on. What is it? At best, it can be a small picture and a training ground for what's going on in the church as a whole. And that idea came from starting with the youth group. No one questioned what went on at youth group. It bothered me at the church in town here that when they asked me, they knew nothing about me. I just came as a 1-2 package with my dad. I was in seminary at the time that he was asked to be the pastor. They needed a youth guy. They never asked what I would teach. In fact, when I asked them that, they said, well, I'm sure it'll be fine. They never asked what I would teach. They just wanted their kids there involved and safe, according to whatever they thought was safe. Meaning, why is the kid standing on the back bumper of the van? You know, it's like because they jumped on and I tried to get them off. You know, those are the kind of things we're arguing about. So you started teaching goals to the advisors. So they were not just keeping kids safe, making brownies and running games and events. Then I realized it took the advisors forever for them to get these goals that we were teaching them. They could repeat them after a few years. But what about drive them? I came down to three things. No matter how long I talk, it came down simply. Love souls, teach roles, make disciples. Love souls, teach roles, make disciples. And I thought, no, this for me was my life. 1 Corinthians 5, it says, for the love of Christ compels us. It drives us. It was like when I heard that was like a submarine or a torpedo going through the water. That's the idea of that word. The love of Christ drives us. That was the idea. I thought, well, then how do we get this? These are very simple things. Love souls, teach roles, make disciples. Teach them to do the same thing. How do you get that so that no matter what they're doing, that's what they're thinking? I desired the youth to get established in the faith. I was hearing about train wrecks in youth groups, which led to the summer of 2005, started the trips, the summer trips with, if you can't get the adults to read, I wasn't dealing much with them, but realizing the adults weren't reading much, I thought, well, the kids can read. And we started with John Piper's Don't Waste Your Life in 2005. I noticed a change in the youth. But it was hard for the youth. They started coming alive with not only reading, with studying, with showing up at church and actually wanting to be there. But it was very hard for the youth to be stable when the adults were not on the same page. So after 2 years, I could still remember that. We're at Pine Grove. I remember standing down there with a massive room of youth and saying and having to tell them that the church had blown up and what was going to happen with the youth group. I said, sometimes adults don't act in the way that Jesus wants us to either, and the problems are pretty complex. I said, as a result, youth group will be meeting in a field next week, and we'll continue out there. As the advisors had come with us, and we were going to start the new church, and we had to continue there. 1999, 7 years later, we had a massive blow up here with this group. As most in the group that started here realized, we didn't know each other very well. We had been together at that Pine Grove church for some as few as 6 months. We knew what we were against, but we didn't know what we were for. And so you come here, and there's a big blow up. That was big for me because, remember my childhood, if you remember from a few years ago when I gave you the backstory, New Hampshire was my childhood. It was solid. I remember my dad getting upset when one or two families left and the one came back. But I don't remember any kind of big upheavals. New Jersey was rough, but it was familiar background. Pine Grove was rough and unfamiliar. And only 2 years in a growing youth ministry, but it was hard to keep momentum without the main church on board. Cornerstone was rough because we were pioneering. Started realizing for the first time we were not part of a denomination. For the first time you had people that had no concept of the things that were normal for us. And I thought we had a foundation to work with. Coming out of that blow up in January 2007, I started an extensive class for men as a piddly attempt to get at the root. People have been asking for years, where are the men? Then that's a rough thing. I'll do it slightly different than others you'll hear pushing for men, because I don't believe by guilting you or bullying you, that's going to change you. I have to figure out what has gone on in society, because the men will go, well, I'm going, but they just don't agree with me, or they're not letting me in, or here's a thinker, I'm a thinker, they want puppets. You go back and forth with all this stuff, but everybody agrees at the end, you don't get many men moving together in the same direction. So I started an extensive class for men as a piddly attempt to get at the root. My Uncle Bill, my mom's brother, had told me to watch an 80s movie, Stand and Deliver. Anybody watch that movie? Nobody's heard of it. Stan has heard of it, and Merv has heard of it. That movie hit me. It was right at the time when all this stuff was happening. And it impacted me on how to work with the impossible. I can't even remember. And so if I go back, just like many parents, they go back and they let their kids watch a movie and they go, ooh, I didn't remember that was in there. So I don't remember everything. So go watch it and then come blame me. But what I remember is a midlife crisis kind of thing of, I want my life to be made worth something. So some business guy, whatever he was, sold everything, went out west and wanted to teach in a school to make an impact on kids. He found out he was just babysitting and dealing with detention kids. All it was trouble. And they weren't getting anywhere. And he thought, I gave up my whole life for this. I can't even teach them anything. And in the middle of it, he's about to messing with his marriage, messing with everything. It was just total upheaval. And somebody told him, stop looking. You can either spend the rest of your life dealing with the trouble people or having these fantasy dreams. Take the rest of what's there. Take whoever's left. That quiet one over there. Take that one that's slightly slow with academics. Take anybody who will listen. And you meet there, and he said, we're going to take these kids that can't even do math, and we're going to teach them calculus or something like that. Whatever, I can't remember. Okay? And they had no funds, the tired teacher, principal, nothing. And they met in the sweltering heat with no air conditioning, and he pushed them to the max. And the goal was not to get everybody on board. It says you get those kids that nobody's looking for on board, and the others will turn around and come around behind it. Raise the bar to the impossible, then encourage true movement, which is where I bumped into sometime. God is easily pleased, never satisfied, as I knew that I could spend my whole life studying about God and not know him accurately and not obey him accurately, but he had called me to himself, and I was saved because of what he did, not because of what I knew. And because of that, a life of growing was normal. Well, then that was where raise the bar to the impossible. Every church was saying, I told you, I just sat with Lancaster pastors a couple weeks ago. I told you, he threw down the gauntlet and he said, I'm tired of just talking about this. I will not be the pastor of a prayerless church anymore. He said, just tell me legalistically, what is your church doing about prayer? You know, I could say it. I'll tell you, we're here, but I'm still not sure I don't think we're a praying church. But we have legalistically what they're looking for. Mr. Happening person who's now retiring, his eyebrows went up. He goes, you have that many on your prayer meeting? That's the size of your church? I'm still not sure I know we're not a praying church yet. But he was looking for the roots. How do you get people to pray? How do you get families together? How do you get a church that's going to go anywhere together? So I watched the movie, going to start that class. We also went to the pastor at that time of Millersville Bible Church looking for advice. Because when we had upheaval in 06, when you're in a small church, everybody's saying, you're saying this, you're saying this, you're saying this. And it's like, all right, I know we can't convince. It's your opinion versus mine. Let's get an outside opinion. I remember going to him, and he showed discipleship material that he had developed through some of these same issues in the church. And he talked about a culture that had developed at the church where he said, if the stuff that is being said at your church was said at this church, there would be an awkward silence because the church was unified on some of those definitions. They wouldn't have any room for that kind of talk. So I thought, okay, we're going to make an attempt to head in this direction. And this is what we were looking to do. We have men's fellowship from 7 to 8:30. We said, okay, we're going to aim high. We're going to cultivate the heart of a disciple. Those verses meant something. We went through them. Increase our biblical understanding of God. Increase our understanding of the current Christian climate. Grow together as men of Cornerstone Bible Church. We're going to meet from 8:30 to 12, the second Saturday of every month. The class will meet for 10 months. Half of your Saturday. We got you here a good part of Sunday. We're going to take half of your Saturday as well for 10 months. It's going to cost $60 for textbooks for people that aren't reading. You got to be there 90% of the time to complete. You have to have 100% of the textbook reading and worksheets. Only those who have read the section may speak during the discussion. Hand in worksheets 1 week prior to the class, which will list your 5 top statements from each reading and any questions you would raise for discussion. You have to do 100% of the outside reading and 5 book analysis papers. 2 pages, 4-page maximum, double space, no more than 1 paragraph summary. The rest of the paper consists of interaction with ideas from the book and with your personal opinion of the book. We did that, and every one of those purposes, we assigned a book. This was me knowing that very few of the people have read this kind of book before. In fact, I asked for advice, and some heard some of the books, and they said, they can't read that. That's above them. I said, please don't tell them men that. They can read it. Cultivate the Heart of a Disciple. This book changed my life in college. Spiritual Leadership by J. Oswald Sanders. I listened for books that people keep talking about. They read, and then they come back, and this is one of the ones I still hear pastors referring to today about what does it mean to not just want to lead, but to have your heart change from the inside out so that you are a man of character. Increase our biblical understanding of God. Systematic theologies. I think you cannot follow God if you don't know God. We are woefully inadequate with what we think we need to know about God. As we've said, you don't need to be a theologian to be a Christian. We are theologians. You go around saying, that's not right, this is right. You're saying, making assessments about God. Most of the systematic theologies are way above where we are. Above meaning we don't have enough character or perseverance to stick with them. Wayne Grudem was the first one that came out with something that was solid, that was seemed to to not only teach us the things that we haven't heard, but to do it in a way that we could understand and a way that would lead to praise. I agreed with everything he said except for some of his things on the Holy Spirit and on demons, but the rest of it was solid stuff. So we read this whole book here. Increase our understanding of the current Christian climate. And we read two books with that. This Reforming Fundamentalism was Fuller Seminary and the New Evangelicalism. The big problem is, if nobody knows what Fuller Seminary is, that's what we're saying is you don't have an evangelical heritage. You say, why do I need to know that? Because it was the massive shift. Whereas those before would have gone to Princeton Seminary. What do you know about Princeton Seminary? Where did your pastor or those that influenced you get their training? And who did they learn from? And where were they heading? There's a book over here that when we're saying, I don't care where they were learning, I'm studying on my own. R.C. Sproul wrote this book called The Consequences of Ideas, saying most of us are impacted by ideas that we have no idea where they came from. It takes a long time to get from the dusty halls of academia to your head. And by the time they get to your head, you can't trace where they came from. So we read here about some of the players. Some of these players were actually some of my dad's teachers. When he read this book, he said, I didn't realize the backstory. I just was benefited by their ministry. When the guys read this, this is back when Billy Graham was a big thing. I think Billy Graham was the best and occasionally some of the worst of what happened in evangelicalism, occasionally. And the point, you go, no, he's right. No, he's wrong. Maybe you didn't run in any circles where he was wrong. That's what happened when I went to Bob Jones. And all of a sudden, all the rights I heard were the wrongs. And I said, no, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And then I started listening. But the guys that actually read this came back, and at some point they said, why do we need to care about these guys? I said, because you're reaping the fruits of their ideas and the direction they've gone. But number two, they came back and said, who are the good guys? Both sides were saying, I want to follow God with all my heart. Both sides were smarter than you and I. Both sides had a ton of verses. And both sides were saying, God, help me to be faithful, even though I'm being attacked. Which were the right guys? The hardest book we read was this book by one of my dad's professors, No Place for Truth, or Whatever Happened to Evangelical Theology. No Place for Truth, meaning people are all saying they're following God, but everybody's disagreeing about what following God looks like. What's happened? And it talked about everything we've been talking about here the last years of where words don't mean the same thing anymore, and we're valuing things in different priorities. It's a movement in society. It isn't just in your church. It's affected you. We went through that class twice. And at this point, I want to publicly process any thoughts that would be helpful as you listen. What are you thinking? Just say anything that comes to your mind here. And it's okay. We won't. Pastor?
God sets the standards, and his standards are high. Interesting, Bowler this week on reading Atlantic Magazine. I'm not that familiar with it, but it's definitely not Christian as such, as much as I know.
Right.
But it spoke about...
Pull that mic down.
Spoke about...
Is the green light on? All right, it's for the recording, Dad. So, Luke, you don't know what's going on.
In any case, it spoke about America today, and we are becoming...
I forgot the word, readerless. We don't read and comprehend anymore. 49 out of the 50 states in America, our reading levels are down. 49 out of 50. The only one that is going up and improving, Mississippi. And you don't think of... brains from Mississippi. That's
no.
Backwards, whatever.
I've heard that's the poorest state, or one of the poorest.
Probably. It's the only one that's growing. Why? Teachers have authority. Second, they have high standards. You do not move to the next grade. You don't go from first to second. You don't go from second to third unless you reach a certain level. They have high standards, but they are the only ones that are growing. The rest of America is going downhill academically. Spiritually, even more so from God's perspective, his standards are high. Be like Christ, nothing less. So when we lower them, we is in trouble.
That's high standards. I forget what else you said. The one state growing has standards, and then what?
Authority.
Thank you. Authority.
Teachers.
To care.
Muller, like when he shared from this, he shared his own background. Up until the seventh grade, he was in public school.
Seth, give him that. It's recorded.
Up until the seventh.
No, no, don't do that, please. Please don't do that.
Up until the seventh grade, he was in a public school, I think in Florida, but I'm not sure.
Yes.
And it was going very well for him.
Yes.
Seventh grade, the family moved to another place that was trying the new school method. Instead of teachers with authority, the teachers were guides. And I can't remember the other word he used.
That. Yeah.
But they were guides. They were there to help you. They were not authority figures. And I can remember in my days in New York City when they started opening open classrooms instead of walls. They wanted open classrooms so you could, well, like us here in the Sunday school in the kitchen, you can hear the others. And all sorts of distractions, all sorts of distractions. But authority, yes.
This book said, we no longer want pastors who are going to take us somewhere. We want mirrors. We want somebody who is saying what we have already found out to be right in a better way than we can already say it. So we said pastors are only able to lead the people as long as they stay inside of what you already think. And that's what we're saying as we move toward guides. I heard the difference. I went to the school that just closed here, Baptist Bible College in Clark Summit. I went there years ago on a college trip, and I sat in a class saying, talking about the difference between a leader, and said, is this how your church has gone? And everybody raised their hand. This was normal. You know, is your pastor a shepherd? Does he seek to lead the people? How does it fit with the whole church? And he said, that's the way we used to do it. Now we're going to do it in a way that our job is not to, that would be arrogant for us to tell them to all step in line and follow us. Now we're going to say, we're here to help you to reach your full potential, to free you all up to do whatever God has called you to do. It's way more complex than just a back and forth. Was there too much of a one-man show? Yes. But the answer to that was to take it from leading from the front, not just a one-man, but to enabling everybody to determine on their own what it meant to follow God and freeing them up to do that. It was a big difference. What are you thinking? Yeah, Harold.
I was here for that class, and I personally was fed from that class, but I wasn't successful at reading through all the material. I don't actually remember what all I did.
You did most of it, Harold.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
But what I thought was helpful was that one book which we went through was about Fuller Seminary and where things went from there. I didn't catch everything, but it was eye-opening to me to see that there were bigger things going on than
what you were seeing.
Than what I had known before. You know, so it was a place to look. Also, the Grudem book, the
Systematic Theology.
Systematic Theology. We still have that. We have all four of those books here at home. But that book was handy to have around. It was difficult for me, what you said about about what he said about
charismatic
the Holy Spirit.
One. Yeah.
That was a little rough because I liked how he made this stuff systematic. I liked that you could use it as a reference. And then I saw, okay, Grudem and Piper,
right,
both have some charismatic influences,
right,
that I would have a strong argument.
Yep.
When I wouldn't,
right,
have a strong argument. That's the problem.
Right. They're smarter than
they're
you.
They're smarter, yeah, than me. Yeah.
But you're still concerned.
But that opened my eyes that even even the smart guys can. I think I think that they're wrong.
Right. Right.
But it made me think that I really need to strengthen my own thinking
that.
So that I'm not
that.
So it was helpful. The what was it? 4.5 hours? What was it? 3.5 hours?
Yeah, 3.5. Might have felt like 10.
That was.
Yep.
That's a little rough. And
it was.
And I thought about that. If you did that now, I work.
Yep.
I work most.
Yeah, I get
most
it.
Saturdays. How would
I
that work?
It.
You know.
I get
that
it.
That would bankrupt us.
Yep.
But,
I get it.
But it was very useful. But it was rough. It was a lot of material, and I do like some lectures. I mean, it's great to share some things, but I do like some lectures sometimes,
right,
when I can give fed and hear the nitty gritty put together already, get what I can get out of it.
Right. Also found that ones who were very helpful and much more informed could also have things not convinced at all that were right, but not be able to interact with them because didn't have answers. You know what my firm statement has been? As they keep saying, just like the public schools going down, and they're like, no, we have all these resources, and you know we're paying a lot of taxes for these public school. You know what? Whatever's going on there, I know when I'm doing that Bible adventure thing for just our conservative Lancaster County school, I can't believe how many kids have special needs, all right? And it's not just what, see, the definition of special needs has changed so much. But what happens is all those with certain special needs have their own guides, their own paid staff that are running around with them. You used to have a room full of 19, 22 people, whatever. Now there's 3 or 4 other people in that room because the kids are bouncing off the walls, the certain ones. When I've learned, instead of... It's so rough. The leader at the Bible Adventure years ago would say, I'm going to give you the rough kids. Okay, I'm used to that. And then I go, can you handle them? I said, well, I know how to handle them, but I don't know how you want me to handle them, and I definitely don't know how the school wants me to handle them. But I know what I would do with them, but I can't. I can't do about anything that I would normally do. Well, how do they handle? So I've started asking the kids, and they're... At Bible Adventure, like, if they don't behave, they got to go back. And I said, you're crazy. I started asking the kids. I said, does this kid act like this in class? They go, yeah. I said, how does the teacher respond? Well, this one yells, this one cries. But they're all acting like this. So how do you stop them? Well, you send them to the principal. What are you going to do? Send a note home? What are you going to do? You can't even make them do anything because you're not understanding their condition. And that's why what Harold said, I get it. It was crazy when we pulled that. I didn't think it was normal, and I didn't expect anybody to do it. That's how bad I think the problem is. I was willing to risk things. Dad and I would wrestle for years. He goes, they can't do it. And he said, they're not ready. And I said, Dad, when are they ever going to be ready? They're getting busier and busier and busier. And we're accepting less and less. Are you happy with the product? He goes, no. Said, well, look, is your way working? And it's like, no. Is my way working? No. Well, then which way is going to work? Somehow we have to get at these roots. Maybe if somehow they can see there's more going on behind the scenes, then they would take responsibility for the problem. If they don't even recognize the problem's going on, how are they going to address it? Go ahead. Anybody else? Darla.
I feel like I'm going to really touch on touchy ground.
Go ahead.
Saying this. I was impacted. Okay. I was impacted recently. Something I'd never heard of before that Darren said about his dad. is that he wasn't a reader. In fact, he couldn't read very well. And I didn't know that all these years. And that coupled with other thoughts make me think this right now. Like, okay, so my question is, okay, God, Christ chose men that were for his disciples.
Right. Fishermen.
That were fishermen.
Right.
Unlearned.
Right.
Not academic, not heavy.
Right.
You know, okay, so Matthew was probably well-educated. You know, like, how many of them were
maybe
readers?
Judas.
Did anyone read? Who was literate at that time? Was there anything to read?
Right.
What kind of reading was done in that part of history?
Right.
In that era, in that time? And then I think about, you know, like, ancient history and men. Like, okay, so throughout all of history and even currently, what is this thing about, you know, girls like to do schoolwork?
Yep.
Like, I am just pulling that all out, and I'm like, okay, so my dad, his dad wouldn't have been much of a reader. He hardly wasn't much reader.
Yep.
When my dad was a young father, husband, he decided he was going to start reading through the Bible every year, and he's done it for the past, like, 30 years or 40, I don't know, every year. And he's, you know... But some people are not readers at all.
Right.
You know, and back then, and all of history, was no such thing as, like, listening to anything. You know, like, so just processing that thing of men. And I'm thankful for you doing that class. And I'm thankful for, you know, Drew took his, what is a gospel book, and he was reading on the plane.
Right.
And I was really blessed by that, you know. And so, yeah, the importance of learning to read and also to understand, just like Harold said, you know, like, so what do we do if we feel like we're not, you know, not as heady as some of these people?
That.
But
right.
God can use them because he used the disciples.
Right. Which is why if you start, Stan, here, if you start putting together these pieces, see, sometimes I wish, and I'm not going to, but I wish we could go back and do all that talk again. Because I think we were distracted or upset or thinking it's not the way to go. But I think the climate is getting better, that we're hungrier for what's going on now, which is why when you see here, I think I'm going to throw it up in the membership class as well. The words we value in this church are slow, awkward, back burner, meaning instead of just going, you're right, you're wrong, you're right, you're wrong. Okay, that's what you think now. Hold on to it. We can't force you, can't bully you into change. Don't you bully us into change. And you bully us many ways. I'm going to another church. I don't want to talk. This is a waste of my time. I don't want to look at you. I think you're wrong, but you won't agree with me. We bully each other in many different ways. On the other side, how do we keep distilling things down until we figure out, well, what does it look like? You heard what she said about that was how it was in college for me. I said, I was a lazy A student. I was number 6 in my class of 200, and my goal my senior year of high school was never to take homework home. I was a nerd. I did my English homework in chemistry. You know, I did that. I did it during lunch because I did not. Everybody had books going home, not me. I had stuff to do at home, and it wasn't school. But I was going to get it done, right? And I even felt guilty because I had a conscience, so I asked one of the teachers. I said, I'm getting 100+ in your class. Can I do another class's work in your class? He said, yes. What was he going to say? I don't know. But my point was, that didn't work when I got to college. All of a sudden, I saw letters that I'd never seen in the alphabet on my grades. I think I saw a D, and I didn't know what D meant. And I realized I was so busy just skating through the system without ever owning it. Remember what I said? I got there and the girls and the Asian students blew every curve that we had. The whole class failed except the girls and the Asians. It's like, if the rest of you had just been normal and gotten a D, then we all would have gotten Bs. That's your fault. What is that? What do you do about that? Which is also, if you study... How? When everybody says, women, shut up, you're supposed to follow, that doesn't fix anything. Which why you'll see why we're working with the women in a different way here. The other side, yeah, but in 2 minutes, everything will be back up again and we'll pray and quit. But the other side of that is, what do you do with the men? What do you do today? Here's one of the solutions. I know we're not reading, and I think the ear has been the problem. And you go, well, isn't it better to listen to an audio book or something than nothing? Yes. Here's how bad the problem is. I have begged every pastor, theologian, whoever I bump into. I said, I cannot get these men to read. Right? Can you give me a podcast that's going to address the vertical aspect? I said, they're listening to politics. They're listening to worldview stuff. They're reading the books that interest them. They won't read the books that I believe they should do because they're just not interested. Can you give me a podcast that will deal with their heart to love God? Short, 15 minutes. They look at me like I'm from Mars. And they said, I don't know, have them listen to sermons. I said, no, there's a podcast for everything in the world. I need something that's going to whet their appetite for the eternal so that it will lead them to do what they can't do and they say they won't do and read. My mom's uncle was the choir director at Columbia International University. I didn't realize till later that he was dyslexic and couldn't, saw everything backwards, like a couple of my kids. Some of my kids see double. I didn't realize that because back then there wasn't all this, leave me alone, I'm dyslexic. He didn't even know what it was. But he found a way around it because he wanted to be part of the rest of the world. And when I say that, like Darla said, that's a touchy statement because all of a sudden I'm saying, you're saying you're not acknowledging how hard it is. I want to cry together with you and I want to go slow. But if you're not careful, we're more focused on where we're different than each other than on what God's calling us to together. Tim is very different than me, than my dad. And in where he's going to push and in what he's going to see, and there's many reasons for that, get to know him. But he said, I used to be okay with people saying, I don't read. That's your thing, Tim. Until he said, we've been given a final authority, and that has been given in words. The Bible. What are you going to do with a whole bunch of men who say, even then they'll go, I'll read the Bible, but that's it. Well, how do we help them get more from the Walters, Josiah and Miriam Walter are in Chad, giving their whole life, surrounded by Muslims, other groups, all kinds. They're giving their whole life to translate the Bible into a language that hasn't ever had the Bible. And we're saying we're surrounded by the Bible. And we go, I read that. 2 Peter 1 says, you do well to pay attention to the word as to a lamp shining in a dark place until the day dawns and the morning star arises in your heart. You know what that means? As a lamp shining in a dark place, it means you turn off the light and there's no light. It means if you turn off what you understand of the scriptures, you have no light. Here's where my idiot term comes in. You have understanding. You're not stupid, but you have your own understanding. And Proverbs is very clear that the one who trusts in his own heart is a fool. There's about 10 verses like that about your own understanding. The point is not everybody needs to be intellectual. Everybody needs to be smarter than you can't. I'm not. I wish I was more educated. Not to be better than you, just because I realize how many holes there are in my thinking about God that he has given us to know. On the other side, how can we say we have enough when we are content with what we know from Scripture? And all of these other resources are not part of our world. We'll come back to it. Lord Jesus, would you help us? This is heady stuff. It's heavy stuff. It's touchy. It's very touchy. But I pray as we tap on some of these things that you would help us to realize not only how big the problems are, but also that you are the one that delivers that you are the one that changes, and that you say that you will build your church. And then, Lord, would you help us? Help us as a United States citizens, most of us. Help us. We have these advantages and we have these problems. Help us to use the advantages you've given us in a way that submits to your authority and brings you glory. Thank you for evidences of change. We come in Jesus' name. Amen.